I wonder what's caught your attention in the news this week, particularly the things that cause you concern. Some of the things I noticed were the things I was praying about just a moment ago. This attack in Syria that was on the news this morning. It struck me what an awful thing it is that these terrible weapons can be used by a country against its own people, which seems to be what has happened. You know, we don't know exactly what's happening yet, but that seems to be what is happening. How can these things be? There's the spy poisoning case and the ongoing inquiry and the arguments and the accusations being traded back and forth and the implications that are being played out on the world stage. There's this murder rate in London. There was a headline that people are disputing, but they're saying that the murder rate in London is exceeding that in New York, with 52 cases so far this year. And I was listening to various radio reports of people who were saying, well, this is clearly as a consequence of not enough police on the streets, or others saying it's an issue with education, others saying it's an issue with gang warfare, others say it's all being fueled by drug money, and loads of discussions and debate about what's going on and what needs to be done about it. There's this issue with the US and China as they argue about how much money they're going to spend on stuff that goes in and out of their countries. And the ongoing question about what life is going to be like for us and for people in Europe as we split from the European Union. And I think it's legitimate to ask questions about what is going on. Why do people act to harm others? How should major nations engage together? What is behind the ongoing differences between them? How should we leave the European Union? What will be the implications? We can think of many factors that will cause people to do what they do. They may have personal motives. There may be a desire for revenge. There may be turf wars going on. There's wanting to appear strong, a deep sense of patriotism and care for a country. And these and many other reasons are real. And we've been given the ability to make choices and to make decisions about how we're going to act in particular situations. But it's also right to wonder about whether there's something going on behind the scenes that is affecting and impacting what is going on around us. And the book of Daniel asks that question in a range of different and powerful ways. And we spent a bit of time earlier looking at some of the stories that we find in the first part of that book, as we trace the lives of four young men forcibly transported from their home, from their country, from their place of worship, from their culture, from their society, taken by a conquering force and transplanted into the capital of another city. And there in Babylon, they were selected to become members of the civil service and were continually faced with the challenge of how they live in a strange land but still stay faithful to their God. What was acceptable? What was a step too far? Those were the questions that they seemed to face on a regular basis. A challenge that I think we face more and more in our country. As a whole, it turns away from any thought of God and encourages us to live in a way that is not right in God's sight. And how do we as people who live in this country engage with that? What is it okay for us to do? Where do we draw the line and say, no, that's beyond what is acceptable? And so we saw some examples of some of the things that they got involved in, and think about how they refused to bow down and worship this image, even though it meant being thrown into a furnace, that Daniel refused to stop praying, even though he knew it would involve him being thrown into a den of lions. Stories from long, long ago, but stories that challenge us as to how we respond to the questions that are posed to us about what is important and how we should live. Many of us will come across those stories in Sunday school or in other contexts, but probably we may be less familiar with what happens in the second part of the book, from chapter 7 onwards, which is much more an insight into the private world of Daniel, his visions, his prayers, what he saw, what it meant, and how he responded to it. But in both parts, the first six chapters and then the next part of the book, we see a powerful truth, that there are forces and powers above those that we normally see. They are active in this world and they can have a real impact. And the reality of that enabled three men to walk unharmed in a blazing fiery furnace. It enabled another to walk freely among lions. And we see that the king is not the ultimate power. Even though he was the ruler of the most mighty nation on earth at that time, there was one above him. That's what we see in the first part. In the second part, we get a different insight into what is going on behind the throne. And in the chapter that Maureen just read to us, we see this demonstrated in a powerful way. And it's an important chapter because it encourages us to think differently about what's going on around us, about how we perceive power, about how we understand the forces that are involved in this world and beyond. How do you respond to this idea? The idea that there is more going on than we can see around us. That the people who think they are in power are not the ultimate sources of power. That there are forces at work, forces for good, forces for evil, that have a direct influence on what happens in our world. We are encouraged to not think that, as we more and more live in a secular society where we think we have all the answers to all the questions, or at least we can come up with them if we don't know them. Sometimes people think that only physical things, things that we can see, things that we can engage with, are real. Others can take the view that if actually this is reality, that there's all this stuff going on around us that we can't see, then anything we try and do is totally meaningless. Others take a middle view, saying that there are these forces at work and we need to be prepared to engage with them and to live with a sense of that wider reality. And this is what we find Daniel doing in the, slightly confusing chapter that we read. So let's quickly outline what happens in the story. There's a vision about a war. We find this in verse 1, that there's a message about a great war that was going to happen. We don't know exactly what this relates to, but that's where the story starts. We find Daniel mourning, grieving, concerned for a period of 3 weeks. We're not told why, but it might be over the state of Jerusalem, the city that he loved, the city that he'd been forcibly taken from. People were starting to go back, and they found it was a shadow of what it had been before, and that might have been what was causing Daniel to mourn and to grieve. Then, towards the end of the month, on the 24th day of the month, he sees this terrifying vision of someone described as a man, but somebody who was much more than a man, who when he spoke, caused Daniel to fall down onto the ground. This man was a heavenly being. Some think he's an angel, while others think this is a vision of God himself. And certainly some of the ways in which he's described are used of God elsewhere. So he's a heavenly, a supernatural being. But then in verse 10 and 11, Daniel was lifted up, he was encouraged. A heavenly messenger comes and reaches out a hand and lifts Daniel up and helps him to stand. Not necessarily the same being as seen in the first vision, but someone who'd been sent by God with a message for Daniel. And then we get an explanation that this angel had been sent by God, but he'd been held back for 21 days. The period of time for which Daniel was mourning, there'd been this person, this heavenly being, who had been sent by God to come and speak to him, to bless him, to encourage him, And he hadn't been able to get there. Something had got in the way. And he was only able to break free when he called out to another supernatural being, Michael, to come and help him. Daniel recognizes that this vision has really got to him, and he's strengthened and encouraged by this angel. And then this angel goes on to explain what's going to happen next, that he's going to go and fight. In verse 20, he's going to fight against the prince of Persia, and the prince of Greece is going to get involved in some way. But he says, before all that's going to happen, I'm going to explain to you, Daniel, what's going on. That's basically what this chapter is about. And it introduces kings and princes. And we could be forgiven for thinking, who on earth are these particular people? In verse 1, we have Cyrus, the king of Persia, which is a reference to an actual human being. It's nice to actually get one human being in this particular story. And it gives us a time frame for what is happening. We know when this happened in the context of his reign. It was a point in history. But then we get references to these other beings, the prince of Persia, Michael, the king of Persia, the prince of Greece. And this heavenly messenger sent by God to Daniel was delayed for 21 days by the prince of Persia. This tells us a number of things. The prince of Persia was a heavenly being. There's no human could have resisted a heavenly messenger sent by God. This prince was a powerful being, as he was able to delay this messenger. He's acting against God's purposes. A bad angel, often referred to as a demon. So there was all this going on that Daniel, for those 21 days, had no awareness of at all. This messenger received help from Michael, one of the chief princes, and described later in verse 21 as your prince. And then in chapter 12 and verse 1, he's described as the great prince who protects your people. So it seems that Michael had been given a responsibility by God to look out for the people of Israel. And so we get the sense that God has given responsibility for particular nations to particular heavenly beings. So the prince of Greece would have been another supernatural being with a responsibility for Greece. And the prince of Persia would have been the same. So we get this idea that God has this group of angels and supernatural beings, and he says, you keep an eye on this nation, you sort this one out, and so on. That's what seems to be going on here. And that's confirmed elsewhere in the Bible. But we see that some of these beings are acting to oppose God. That's why they try to resist this messenger getting through to Daniel. We are not expected to think for a moment that there is any real challenge to God's authority in this. His power is absolute. But it does seem that these evil beings who oppose him have, for a time, been given freedom to act as they choose, even if it goes against God's purposes. So with that, there's three things I think it's important for us to recognise. Firstly, there is a reality thing here. Supernatural beings are real. Secondly, Jesus is victorious. And thirdly, if we get our head around this, I think it changes how we think. For many in our nation today, this idea that supernatural beings are real is illogical, it's outdated, something from an earlier and superstitious age that we don't need anymore. We have a deeper understanding of science, we understand how the mind works, we understand how societies engage, and so we can move past such thinking. And this logically extends to how people think about God. In 1979, Julian Huxley wrote, "For my own part, the sense of spiritual relief that comes from rejecting the idea of God as a supernatural being is enormous." He was happy to relegate God to a footnote of history. In a society that is becoming much more focused on material things, on experience, on entertainment, the idea that there is a God who is a real, supernatural, all-powerful being is something that many people are losing or have lost. But that does not change the reality that God is who he has always claimed to be, and his rule and authority are still absolute. It doesn't change the testimony of the Bible. It doesn't change the experience of many, that there are countless numbers of heavenly beings engaged in either seeking to move forward or hold back the plans and purposes of God. And if there are spiritual forces with responsibility over nations and other things, does this help explain some of the things we see going on around us? Are some of the choices made, are some of the actions taken by our national leaders, by chief executives of major corporations, by people we meet and engage with on a daily basis, are they influenced by these spiritual and supernatural beings, either for good or for evil? It does not take away personal responsibility from any of us, but it does encourage us to recognize that maybe more going on than meets the eye. Whenever we start thinking about this, it can get concerning and we can get pressed down with doubts. And so it's essential to recognize and remember that Jesus has defeated all evil powers that exist. And if we don't recognize that, then we can get the idea that we are opposed by powerful evil forces that we have no chance of withstanding. If the heavenly messenger sent by God was resisted for 21 days by another spiritual being, what chance do we have? A totally understandable question that takes us back to the cross and what Jesus accomplished there. Paul writes some amazing words in the second chapter of his letter to the church at Colossae, outlining what God has been able to do because of the work of his Son on the cross. And he says this. He speaks about the fact that the people he was writing to and people like us once were dead, separate from God because of our sin. And God has made us alive. He's given us new life, given us a new identity in Jesus. And because of that, he's been able to forgive us. He forgave us all our sins. Friends, this morning, as we recognize and as we think about this, it's vital for us to remember that what Jesus did on the cross, if that's something that we've taken and accepted and received and believed for ourselves, then one of the things he did was make it possible for all the bad and wrong things that we have ever done to be forgiven, to be dealt with, to be washed away, to be blotted out. And Paul describes it by saying that God cancelled the charge of our legal indebtedness. Think of a court case where the verdict against the condemned criminal is read out and the sentence is passed. And then the judge strikes down all the charges and acquits the guilty person. In our legal system, that would be injustice. But because of Jesus offering himself on the cross, God is able to do this justly. God took our sin, everything that stood against us, and nailed it to the cross along with his Son. While his Son was taken down and is alive again, our sins and the accusations are still there, never to be revisited. And that's wonderful. That's glorious news, something to get excited about. But Paul goes on to say something more. It's not just what God has done for people like you and me in the death of Jesus on the cross. But he made something else possible. And in the next verse he says that he was doing something about the powers and authorities, and he disarmed them. He made a public spectacle over them. He triumphed over them. Let's get our heads around this a moment. The sacrificial death of Jesus on the cross defeated any and all evil forces that exist in the universe. They thought they had won, but he demonstrated that they were wrong for everyone to see as he completed the work he'd been sent to do on the cross and demonstrated that in his resurrection as we were celebrating last Sunday. Yes, at the moment they are refusing to lie down, but these evil forces have been defeated by Jesus and one day will be removed forever. The cosmic implications of the death of Jesus is that all supernatural powers that oppose the will of God have been completely and totally defeated and are subject to his authority. And that should give us confidence and authority as we live in the power of the crucified and risen Jesus. We are engaged in a war, but Jesus, our commander-in-chief, has won, and we are called to join him in what he is doing now. And I think if we take this seriously, it can change our perspective. It can change how we think about the world. It encourages us to be persistent in prayer, I think, as we don't know what's going on above us that's affecting what happens, what we see around us. When we look at what's happening in the news and hopefully pray for those things that concern us, do our prayers extend beyond what we can see to what may be going on beyond that? Does it help us to think less badly about individuals and encourage us to pray for them and against the forces that might be influencing them? Does it cause us to spend time with God, praying that he would give us deeper insight into what is going on, just as he did to Daniel, so that we can engage and pray more effectively and speak out with a prophetic voice about what is going on in the world? When we sometimes think that things aren't happening, let's remember that the messenger from God was delayed for 3 weeks. And let's persist in seeking to do what God wants and pray that barriers and blocks will be removed. Does it encourage us to take more seriously the words from the Lord's Prayer about God's will being done on earth as it is in heaven, as we recognise that some of the things that stop that happening are outside of our normal understanding? Overall, does it give us a bigger picture view that will draw us closer to Jesus and deepen our sense of reliance and dependence on him? Supernatural, spiritual forces, angels, demons are real, and Jesus has authority over all of them. Let's recognize that. Let's engage with it. And let's allow this reality to change who we are and how we live.